The book of Genesis, chapter 49, we want to draw your attention to the verses 3 and 4. Jacob's addressing his sons, and he looks across to Reuben. Verse 3, "Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power, unstable as water. Thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defiedest thou it. He went up to my couch." As we come into this chapter, we find Jacob at the end of his life, his limbs weary so that he could not go to his sons. He summons them to come in from the fields. The assembling around his bed, a great hush suddenly fell upon the entire gathering. A spirit of inquiry and perhaps even of fear settling over their countenances. Jacob firstly, "My son Reuben," before him. He laying his hands upon his rough and rugged shoulders, he acknowledged him to be his firstborn. And in the East, the firstborn occupied a very special position. As well as having precedence over his brethren, we discover in Deuteronomy chapter 21 that he was entitled to a double portion of his father's blessing. And Jacob, now speaking of this blessing, he uses the word excellency here not once, but rather twice over. Reuben, according to verse 3, had received the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. The word excellency comes from a Hebrew word which means abundance. In other words, he, being the firstborn, he had received an abundance of power and dignity. And more than that, he had received the family priesthood. And as such, he had been born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He had power and he had prestige. And as a priest, he had the right to come before God. No wonder his mother, Leah, at his birth rejoiced, because he had been very especially blessed. And similarly, we being born into the family of God, we have been made priests unto God. And as such, we have an abundance of power and prestige. Indeed, John tells us in Revelation 1, verse 6, "He has made us kings and priests unto God." As kings, they had power to rule over their lives, and as priests, they had the right to come before God. You see, being born into the family of God, we not only received adoption, but we received an abundance, blessings beyond measure. You have the right to come before God in prayer. You can leave your burdens and you can leave your praise down at his feet. More than that, you've been given power to rule over your kingdom, to rule over your life. And as a king, you can defeat the flesh. You can drive back those lusts and habits that seek to control our lives. You see, being born into the family of God, we have been born with a silver spoon in our mouths. We have been privileged. We have been blessed with great blessings, right to come before God. Power given to live the Christian life. Power given to overcome those enemies that come into our lives. And so I want to draw your attention this morning as Jacob now blesses his firstborn Reuben. I want you to notice firstly here his unique position. He being the firstborn, he was the eldest, or he was the old man in the family. And as such, he speaks to us of that old man or of that old nature that dwells in each of us. And as such, you notice here his proposal. When we go back into his earlier life, we find his brethren plotting against Joseph. And he hearing their evil plans, we are told in chapter 37, verse 21, he delivered them out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." He discovering their murderous plot to murder Joseph, he courageously stood against them. However, while he managed to stop them shedding Joseph's blood, he then said in the very next verse, but cast them into this pit. And instead of delivering Joseph completely, we find that Reuben sought a compromise, one that would not only spare Joseph's life, but one at the same time would please his brethren. And as we look at Reuben here, we see that he was a compromiser. He sought to plot a way of compromise. You see, the language of Reuben, or the language of the old man, is always the language of compromise. It is always seeking a halfway solution. Indeed, King Saul going out against the Amalekites, the Lord commanded him to utterly destroy them. However, while beginning well and slaying their warriors, we read in 1 Samuel 15, verse 9, but Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fatlings and of the lambs and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuge, that they destroyed utterly. And instead of obeying the command of the Lord, he sought a compromise. He slew some of the Amalekites, but he spared their king. And compromising, he lost the kingdom. You see, compromise is not the language of the new nature. Compromise is the language of the old nature. And it always leads to defeat rather than to deliverance. You know, many years ago, a New Yorker leaving city life, he went out west and he bought for himself one of those great big ranches. Though he was a city man, he intended that he would raise cattle. His friends visiting him, they asked him, well, you're now settled. What have you called the ranch? He said, well, I wanted to call it the Bar J. My wife favored the name Susie Q, one liked the Flying W, and another wanted to call it the Lazy Y. So he said, we're calling it the Bar J, Susie Q, Flying W, Lazy Y Ranch. And they were a little amused at that, and then they're looking around and seeing there were no cattle and asking why there was no cattle. Now, he said, none survived the branding. Reuben compromising with his brethren, he survived, but he lost the blessing of God. And that's what the old sinful nature does. He comes to us and he suggests to us we should compromise. Now, he says, don't be so dogmatic in regard to your doctrine. Just compromise a little. Don't be so dogmatic when it comes to holiness of life. Just compromise a little. But can I ask you this morning, where do most accidents happen? Most accidents happen in the middle of the road. You try to walk between the Word and the world, and you will be knocked down. Here was Reuben, and he compromised, and as a result of his compromise, he lost the blessing that should have been his. And when you compromise with the world and you compromise with sin, you're going to come the worst off. You're going to lose out. Not only his proposal, but notice his promise. He being the oldest in the family, we find him on another occasion seeking to rescue Simeon out of the hands of Joseph. In so doing, he sought permission from his father to take Benjamin down into the land of Egypt. And he promising to bring him back safely, he said, slay my two sons if I bring him not to thee. However, despite promising to forfeit the lives of his own two sons if he did not bring Benjamin back, Jacob said, my son, shall not go down with you. Why? Because, as we're told in verse 4, he knew that Reuben was as unstable as water. His word could not be trusted. And you see, like Reuben, or like the old man, that old sinful nature is not to be trusted. Its word is worthless. Indeed, Paul, revealing his character, he said in Ephesians 4, verse 22, that ye may put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts. And he reminded them that the old man was not only corrupt, but he was deceitful. And the particular word used there means to cheat or to beguile. You see, while the promises of the old man or the promises of the flesh, they are often dazzling, they are deceptive. They will fail. Do not trust the flesh. You know, once summer morning in the 1920s, a Scotchman by the name of Arthur Ferguson stood idly in Trafalgar Square in London. As he watched, he saw a well-to-do American tourist coming and gazing long at Admiral Nelson's statue there. He eventually approached the man and he began to talk, and he sold to him Lord Nelson's statue for $30,000. He also sold Big Ben to another American tourist for $5,000. He also took a down payment from another on Buckingham Palace, for $10,000. Can you imagine those men's disappointment when they finally went to Trafalgar Square and they went to Buckingham Palace and sought to claim him as their own? And you see, the old man, that old sinful nature, he will promise you peace, he will promise you power, he will promise you prosperity, if only you compromise, if only you embrace sin. But never forget the old man, that old sinful nature within is not to be trusted. Jacob shut his ears to Reuben's promises. And when the flesh comes and the flesh promises you this and the flesh promises you that, my friend, shut your ears. Don't listen. Because he can't keep his word. Also notice his position, because later in the book of Judges, we find Deborah and Barak bursting into song. They're singing of those who went out to battle. They mentioned Ephraim, Benjamin, and Zebulun. Then coming to Reuben, they said in Judges 5, verse 16, why abodest thou among the sheepfolds to hear the bleating of the flocks? It seems that Reuben, instead of joining their brethren in battle, they had stayed at home. You see, they were more interested in raising sheep and making money than they were in defeating their enemies. And you see, that old sinful nature that is within every believer is more interested in the things of time than in the things of God. The flesh doesn't mind you thinking right as long as you don't put it into action. Peter, hearing of the Savior's forthcoming arrest, he was horrified. And objecting, he said in Luke 22, verse 33, Lord, I am ready to go with thee, both into prison and to death. Yet the soldiers coming to arrest the Savior, Peter was first to run. He had great intentions, but they never got beyond his head. And why the old man is never short of words, he is always short of works. He never goes into the battle. In the early years of the American Civil War, Abraham Lincoln became so annoyed at the inactivity of the Union commander, George McClellan, that he took up his pen and he wrote to him a letter. The letter was short and clear. He wrote, if you don't want to use the army, I should like to borrow it for a while. Respectfully, A. Lincoln. You see, the old sinful nature will keep you talking in order to stop you walking. Haven't you met people like that? They're always intending, but they are never doing. They talk about going to the prayer meeting, but they never actually get to the prayer meeting. They talk about serving God, but they never actually get to serve God. They would rather be tending their sheep or making money. Don't let that old sinful nature hinder you. That old nature within is out to pull you down. Don't let him have the victory. Not only his unique position, but I want you to think about his unscrupulous past. While he had once been his father's pride and joy, he sinned. And he, falling into immorality, notice that the character of his sin was exposed. Jacob now sweeping away his pride and his hopes, he said in verse 4, "Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it." His sin was the sin of adultery within his own household. In a moment of unbridled passion, he had lain down with his father's concubine. And although we are told in Genesis 35, verse 22, that Israel or Jacob heard it, he did not at that time confront Reuben with his sin. And although he kept it secret for 40 years, Reuben now approaching his couch, his secret was exposed. If his brethren had not previously known about his treachery and about his immorality and his lies, they certainly knew about it now. As he gathered before his father, his past life was revealed. You see, while sin can be covered, sin can never be concealed. It will eventually rise to the surface. Indeed, Moses commanding the 2.5 tribes to cross over the Jordan and to join ranks with their brethren and to drive out the Canaanites out of Canaan. My, he said in Numbers 32:23, "But if ye will not do so, behold, ye have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out." And he reminded them that even though their sin was a sin of omission, a sin of failure, nevertheless, it would eventually be revealed. Sin that is not forgiven can never be forgotten. Like the little seed planted in the ground, it will eventually burst forth. Have you ever watched lightning lighten up the darkened sky? It's full of majesty. One moment all is dark, the next moment as bright as midday. And as it is eventually followed by a peal of thunder, so your sin will eventually break its silence. How embarrassed Reuben must have been that day. The whole family were gathered there. His father called him up, and there in front of them all, he revealed his sin. He revealed his iniquity. And you know, child of God, if there is unconfessed sin in your life, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but God's going to reveal it. God is going to expose it. Oh, before your sin is revealed, confess it. Take it to the Lord. Get it beneath the blood. Not only was it exposed, but notice the consequence of his sin was enduring. Revealing his past, Jacob said, verse 4, "Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it." Tradition tells us that Reuben eventually repented of his sin. And while he was forgiven, yet till the very day that he died, he bore the shame of it. Not only did he not excel, but if you read through his family tree, you'll discover that none in his family ever excelled either. He bore the physical consequences of his sin for the rest of his days. And while the corruption of our sin can be taken away, the physical consequences of our sin is seldom taken away. It often remains for the rest of our lives. Indeed, Solomon speaking in Proverbs, he said in Proverbs 6, verse 32, "But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away." Although repenting of his sin, the reproach would remain to the day he died. David, who committed adultery with Bathsheba, bore the shame. And although there was a time in David's life that David recognized his sin, confessed his sin, and was forgiven his sin, the baby was not raised to life. He had to bear the consequences of his actions, the rest of his life. The physical consequences of sin are indelible. They can't be wiped away. A wee boy one day, practicing his carpentry skills, he took his dad's hammer and he took some nails. He went down the hall and he began to drive the nails into a new door that had been fitted only a few months earlier. And his dad, eventually seeing what he had done, he told the little boy, go down and take those nails out of the door. After some time, the little boy came up. He came up with all of the nails and he left them at his father's feet. But the tears were running down his cheeks because he said, "Daddy, I've pulled all the nails out, but the holes are still there." And while the guilt of sin can be removed, the marks of sin often remain in our lives. The drunkard, he comes to Christ, he confesses his sin, he is forgiven, he is given a new life. But he has to bear the consequences of drinking his liver the rest of his days. God forgives, but we have to bear the consequences. The physical consequences even of our sin. Many treat sin lightly. They say, "Oh, I can sin, I can live as I like, and God will forgive." Yes, if you're genuine, you come to God and you repent of your sin, there is forgiveness with the Lord. But you have to bear the physical consequences. The physical consequences of your sin. Notice also the cost of his sin was expensive, because look at verse 4. "Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel." Nothing is more unstable than water. It is one shape one moment, and it has another shape another moment. And as a consequence of his instability, Reuben never excelled. God hates instability. It is abhorrent to him. You take water and you can put it into the freezer and it freezes. You take water and you put it on the cooker and it boils. And some Christians are like that. One moment they're boiling for Christ. One day they are zealous for the Lord. And the next day they're frozen. They're cold. And God hates it. God hates it. My instability is something we should be seeking to drive out of our lives. Not one thing on Sunday, another thing on Monday, not one thing today, another next week. That was Reuben's problem. He was unstable. He was like water. God hates instability. Not only his unscrupulous past, but I want you to notice his unenviable position. Because being unstable, notice here that his posterity was blighted. Look at verse 4. "Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel." In Numbers chapter 1, verse 20, we find that the tribe of Reuben numbered 46,500 men. However, at the end of the book, rather than having increased in number, they decreased. They numbered only 43,730. And growing small, they never produced a single prophet, military leader, or judge. You see, being unstable as water, he did not excel in numbers. And he did not excel in importance. Where there is instability and unconfessed sin, there will be no prosperity. The soul will not excel. You'll not excel in business because you're not dependable. You'll not excel in your spiritual life. You'll not excel in your spiritual life because God will not promote you. God hates instability. Not only his prosperity, but notice his priesthood was blighted. The Chaldee paraphrase renders verse 4 as, "Because thou hast sinned, the birthright is given to Joseph, the kingdom of Judah, and the high priesthood to Levi." And because of his instability, he lost the priesthood. He lost the right to come before God. And sin is a thief entering into our lives. It robs us not only of our acceptance, but it robs us of our access. It blocks our way to God. "Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart." And while there is unconfessed sin in our heart, unconfessed sin in our lives, while we're unstable, we can't come before God. We can't do business with the God of heaven. Reuben being unstable, Reuben sinning, he lost the priesthood. He lost the right to come before God. Notice also his prosperity was blighted. Verse 3, "Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength." And in losing the birthright, he lost the double portion. Surely we could write over Reuben what might have been, what could have been. But because of sin, it was lost. Instability robs us of our blessing. It brings spiritual poverty rather than spiritual prosperity. You see, believer, when you flip-flop, one day hot, the next day cold, you rob yourself. You rob yourself. Reuben being unstable, one thing one day, another day, he lost the blessing. He lost the blessing. But lastly, I want you to notice his undeserved prayer, because under the law, Reuben should have been put to death. But in Deuteronomy chapter 33, verse 6, Moses prayed and he cried, "Let Reuben live and not die." And we find Moses, who is a picture of Christ here, interceding on behalf of Reuben. And how good it is to know that when we sin, we have an advocate with the Father, one who will pray for our recovery. You see, believer, if only we confess our sin, there is forgiveness with the Lord. He will forgive our sin. He will restore us. He will raise us up again. Reuben was the firstborn, born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He had blessings that the rest would not have. But because of sin and instability, he lost it. He lost it. And when we fail to walk with God, when we are unstable, we rob ourselves. We rob ourselves of blessing. We rob ourselves of power of God in prayer. Oh, how good Jacob was. He was willing to bless them. But Reuben lost the blessing because of sin. Oh, child of God, how we need to guard our lives. God is ready. God is willing to bless us. But how often we rob ourselves because of sin, because of failure. in our own lives. Oh, that we might learn even from Reuben. And if you're not saved, could I say that as Jacob was willing to bless his sons, God is willing to bless you. He's willing to give you power, pardon. He's willing to give you peace. If only you look to him. And you have never come, I trust today that you might come and trust him today.